This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Fool, sucker, chump, pawn, whatever you call it, nobody wants to face the humiliation of being taken advantage of. And there's some science behind that. In her new book, our next guest looks at the psychology behind our fear of being tricked, of being scammed. And she says that fear can actually do more harm than the actual risk of being scammed. Tess Wilkinson-Ryan is a professor of law and psychology at the University of Pennsylvania Carey Law School. She's the author of the new book, Foolproof: How Fear of Playing the Sucker Shapes Ourselves and the Social Order and What We Can Do About It. Tess, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I can think back at situations in my life where I felt like, oh, I think I just got ripped off. Wow, I was a sucker. And yeah, I felt terrible and humiliated at the time. It's not just me. You dig into some of the science behind this. What is it about that experience that can affect us so strongly?
When you are playing the sucker in some way, so imagine you get scammed in like a little street scam, or you send away for something in the mail and you get it back and it's some little ridiculous coupon or something. When you experience that kind of trick, the loss that comes, the loss, the financial loss or whatever, that's a little bit of a hit. But the bigger hit is that it makes people blame themselves for what happened, and it makes them feel really silly and really kind of ridiculous. So you both have this feeling that you have participated in your own sort of downfall. There's a self-blame, which feels terrible. And then there's also the feeling that it's embarrassing, that you've embarrassed yourself or sort of experienced some kind of social humiliation that is incredibly aversive for most human beings.
Yeah, and this is a big point. If somebody stole $20 out of my pocket, I'm going to think, oh, I should have been more careful. But this is on them. If somebody tricks me out of $20, I feel way worse. And this is part of your title here. The social order, in some way, has been disrupted. Why is that such a big difference?
You know, I think when someone tricks you, the natural meaning that like humans derive from that situation is that the person who has been tricked has been sort of put down. They've been kind of kicked down a rung. So that someone, the expression that someone got one over on you, I think that also refers a bit to the social hierarchy, right? They have now sort of climbed above you on some kind of a ladder, and now you look like, you're sort of in a worse position. So socially, it's embarrassing because you look like you have been demoted, kind of, because you were sort of weak enough both to be an attractive target and also to actually fall for it. Now, I think that's the way it feels, but I should also say, I think that feeling can be misleading. And there's all kinds of cases where that feeling is sort of taking us to a place we don't need to go.
That's exactly where I wanted to go next. The fear of being ripped off could actually do more harm than those instances. And there's actually a word for this that's been come up with, a sugrophobia, the fear of being a sucker, basically. Can you talk about that concept?
Yeah, sure. So the word sugrophobia, I have to think of the authors who made this up. This was three psychology researchers who wrote a paper, and they coined this term sugrophobia. And I think they must have been having a good time when they coined this. It literally means like the fear of sucking. It's pretty funny, right? And their idea was, look, this is a common enough phenomenon that it deserves a name. And they covered a bunch of super interesting examples. So I read this paper by Kathleen Vose and Roy Baumeister and Jason Chin when I was in graduate school. I read this paper and it was like a light bulb went off in my head. They described all these instances of people like really overreacting to feeling taken advantage of. And one of the ones that stuck with me was these examples in the US of people having like physical altercations with vending machines. And
losing.
Very much so. Like the number of vending machine associated fatalities is non-zero. And so like, which is wild, right? But the idea was people would put their money in, the machine wouldn't give them their snack or drink or whatever, and they would feel like, oh my gosh, I've just been ripped off. And they would start shaking the machine. Now, there's just no way in that case that it's worth any kind of injury for $1.75, whatever, bag of chips or whatever it is, right? And there are other cases in life, I think, where the overreaction can either cause that like fight instinct, right, to sort of shake the machine, or cause people to sort of steer clear of opportunities or even like charitable instincts that would otherwise be attractive to them.
Talking to Tess Wilkinson-Ryan about her new book, Foolproof: How Fear of Playing the Sucker Shapes Ourselves and the Social Order and What We Can Do About It. okay, Tess, so far we've kind of focused on the individual. I don't want to be ripped off, but maybe that fear of being ripped off is going to change my behavior in bad ways. There's a lot of wider issues here you get into, including social groups in many societies who are associated with the scam artist. Some of our words, I won't say them for being ripped off, come from ethnic slurs, basically, over the years. Who ends up being feared and suspected as the one that's going to turn us into suckers?
Yeah, it was pretty wild to me when I started thinking about this research, because a lot of examples sort of occurred to me because of exactly what you say. There are literally ethnic slurs that mean to taking advantage of somebody. And oftentimes the groups that are painted as sort of likely to take advantage are going to be outside groups. So it's a very common manifestation of like xenophobia, right? These groups are coming to your country. The argument goes, these groups are going to come to your country and take your stuff, right? Don't be lulled into feeling like you're just doing the right thing or sort of doing something humanitarian, goes this rhetoric. Actually, what you should be worried about is that you're going to be sort of too open and they're going to take advantage of you. I find some of this sucker rhetoric pretty widespread and pretty pernicious when it comes to racial and ethnic stereotyping, because it basically preys, it sort of tells people the humanitarian instinct or the care that you have for justice or equality, those aren't good things. Actually, it just makes you a dupe who's going to be tricked into endorsing some kind of, you know, quote unquote, special favorite or something like that. So the idea that I'm trying to sort of play out in the book is the idea that you can use this sucker rhetoric to kind of change people, to sort of change the social order.
You talk about that as weaponization of the sucker rhetoric. Can you talk a little bit more about how that might appear in the political world?
Yeah, for sure. So the idea is that there are lots of situations that could be described as, for example, this is my humanitarian view about, for example, immigration, or this is my idea about what is right. And you could describe these things as being sort of rooted in your values, or if somebody wanted to, they could re-describe that exact same set of values and beliefs as actually you're just being a sucker. And when they describe those beliefs as actually just being a sucker, it's a way of weaponizing the idea of suckerdom, because it feels so bad to be accused of being a sucker. It's a way of sort of warning people away from some of their most sort of human instincts. And so some of the weaponization that I describe in the book I noticed during the 2016 presidential election, when one of the sort of consistent part of his stump speeches that Donald Trump was offering was this sort of old fable about a woman who meets a snake on the road, and the snake says, "I'm cold and I'm injured, please take me in." And he'd tell everyone this story, and they would take the woman would take the snake in, the snake would bite her. And she says, "Why would you do this?" And the snake replies, "You knew I was a snake. What were you thinking?" So the story is about how being compassionate can make you a sucker. And that story was deployed at the time as a specific warning that Americans are going to be suckers in all these different arenas, you know, foreign aid or trade or immigration.
It seems like there are counter narratives, that stories in our lives that we could do that would contradict that test. And you kind of talk about strategies in the book. I just think of the example that fits that format is the Good Samaritan story, where somebody does help someone and give to someone who they would suspect, just given their social nature, and it goes in the other direction. How, in the what can we do about it part of your subtitle, what kind of things do you hope people think about when they think of suckerdom in their lives and politics?
You know, there's all kinds of situations in which it's totally rational to be, it's sensible to be worried that something isn't real, right? That you are in fact going to be taken advantage of. I don't think it's always irrational. The goal that I'm trying to suggest in this book is that we want to right size it, like cut the fear down to the size that we actually want to take up in our own sort of moral lives. And so the ways that I suggest doing this have to do basically with just articulating our values and articulating the fear. I know it doesn't sound like it's particular, you know, it's not like mind-blowing intervention, but the right, but the idea is that in a lot of situations, your goal is something like, you know, integrity, or my goal is compassion or generosity. And the thing that's warping my ability to think clearly about sort of what's going to get me to vindicate those goals is that I'm so nervous people are going to think I'm actually a fool. And if I say to myself, well, look, how big of a deal is that? Right? Oftentimes the answer is, not that big a deal. Go ahead.
You give an example that you go back to in the book, Tess, as someone who teaches students of that student toward the end of the semester. Somebody just passed away in my family. Can I get an extension? Can you just briefly talk about how you evaluate your values to figure out what to do with that?
Yeah. So I think a lot of faculty can find themselves kind of ruminating a bit on like, what if the students are putting one over on me, you know, with reasons they need an extension or whatever. And one of the things that I often think about is, what is the difference between getting it wrong and getting it right? So if I am concerned that a student is you know, using an excuse that isn't true, right? And I let them have the extension, that's not that big of a deal. An extension's no big deal. If I basically refuse the extension or behave as though I'm suspicious and I'm wrong, and in fact, they're going through a difficult period in their lives, that's actually terrible. That's really that to me is a much bigger error. That's the thing I really want to avoid. So I try to think to myself, look, what's my goal here? Overall, my goal is to sort of help students on their way to learning a lot and becoming humane professionals. And most of the time, the best thing I can do is to take what they say at face value and move forward. It's very rarely going to be actually sort of vindicating my true values to sort of be on alert for all kinds of, you know, minor scams in my everyday teaching life.
Tess, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for sharing your book with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's Tess Wilkinson-Ryan, professor of law and psychology at the University of Pennsylvania Carey Law School. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Foolproof: How Fear of Playing the Sucker Shapes Our Lives and the Social Order, and shapes ourselves and the social order and what we can do about it.